This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong and tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Earlier this year, one of the all-time greats and the queen of bowling, Charlene Zulkifli, announced her retirement from the national setup. She leaves behind a successful 28-year career with a total of 74 medals at the senior stage. However, this will not be the last time she'll be out on the lanes, as she is still gunning for her lifelong dream of becoming PWBA champion by competing in the US come April. A retirement announcement that came as a surprise, the 5-time National Sportswoman of the Year will be leaving behind a legacy that'll be hard to match. He joins us on the line to recap an amazing national career.
Been a long, interesting journey over the 28 years. I'm very grateful for everything that has happened, whether all the hardships, all the triumphs and everything. I think because that's what made me the person I am today.
For sure, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very grateful for the experience and for the opportunity, especially to be able to win for Malaysia and bring all those medals back for our country.
For sure, for sure. Your announcement of retirement from the national team kind of come as a surprise, but take us a little bit,
everybody,
you know.
Everybody says that.
Because you thought you'd go on forever.
I wish, but my body said no, you know.
Charlene, take us through your national retirement thought process. You know, when do you know it was time to hang up the gloves?
Actually, I've been thinking about it for a really long time.
Hmm.
But I just like go after, I think I first wanted to retire was after the Asian Games, I think.
Okay.
But then my Asian Games, and then after that, I spoke to my president and he asked me to, oh, you should retire when you're at the top. Then, so I extended. I didn't go through with that intent at that time. Then after the KLC Games, then, oh, you should retire. I'm like, so like every year, I've kind of renewed my license or my contract with myself to go year by year to see whether my body, you know, can take it or not. Especially this last few years has been quite hard because I've had a lot of injuries.
Mm.
Even up through all the triumphs I've had over these last few years, most of it has actually been with injuries, me carrying injuries.
Right.
But nobody knows.
Mm.
Because I don't really want to talk about that at that time, you know, there's something that as athletes, because I was still competing, so I don't want my opponents to know that I got injured. But they knew in 2015 when I did my surgery, but everybody didn't know to what extent.
Right, got you.
But as I train and I did all the things that I used to do, my body like kind of like broke down to a certain extent, just like telling me, oh no, it's painful. Now even when I train, sometimes it's painful.
Mm.
So I think my body's telling me, okay, you need to stop and, you know, just let us recover. Like a car, for example, you use a car for 28 years. Nobody uses a car for 28 years anymore, but imagine if you had a car and you use it for 28 years, need to overhaul the whole engine and stuff like that. So yeah, basically that's what my body is telling me. So why this year? I don't really know. I just felt like the time was right. And probably because last year I had a lot of time to think.
Yeah. COVID made us all do that, right?
Yes, yes. To think, to re-strategize, to actually think, you know, what do I want to do? Because, yeah, I love sports. That's a no-brainer. But I always wanted to do other stuff in my life as well.
Okay.
So I always knew that the time would come soon, but I didn't know when. But I told myself I'll know when my body tells me. So this last year, I've had a lot of injuries. Like I think I mentioned before in other medias, I had like in 2015, I had to have my foot and ankle operation where I had osteoarthritis and a bone was jutting out. So it was very painful for me to just walk normally.
Mm.
So I had to scale it, and after that, even in the KLC Games 2017, beginning of the year, I had to take some time off from training because I have injury on my right wrist, TFCC, and then lately, this last 2 years, I've also had an injury on my knee, you know, the cartilage is kind of gone, so I had to do like a lot of injections, stem cell injections, HA injections, so like, after a while, I'm just like, I mean, there's so much you can help your body, but if it does, still doesn't have enough time to do it on its own, things just won't happen. So I was always like still pushing my body through all the rigorous training, gym and stuff like that. So it didn't work. It wasn't enough. So I was like, okay, I think I need to do something seriously about this. So that's when that, and also like, you know, thinking to myself, I always knew that I was going to retire. So like I said just now, but I was preparing for it for the last more than 10 years because I never knew when that time would come because as an athlete, you never know what if suddenly you had a debilitating injury and then you had to stop, you know, within that next 3 years. So I always prepared for it because I still studied, got my degree in sports psychology, which is my passion. Then I also help out in the administrative part of our sport at the grassroots level and also the national level right now because I'm also the assistant secretary for our bowling congress. And I also I've been coaching at the development level for the last 20 years while still being an athlete. So I did all those while I was still competing so that, you know, I won't have to be like some of my other colleagues where when you stop, then you'll be like, oh shoot, what am I supposed to do now kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to like, okay, once I retire, I want to have options of what I can do. I don't want to just be stuck. I have to do this. No, I want to have a choice of what I want to do. And this last 20 years, I've been preparing myself, but it's still not easy. During the day of me announcing my retirement in front of everyone at the PC was like one of the hardest things I've done.
I'm sure. I mean, you dedicated your whole life essentially to the game, right?
And also beginning of the week where I went to see my teammates and my coaches first to let them know that I'll be retiring. Because it was the first day of training after, I think, we had to stop a bit for the COVID, because of COVID. So we had to come back for this year. So it was the first day of training. Then when I announced that, they were like, huh, are you sure? Are you joking? You know? So they were kind of surprised. But like, I mean, they knew. I quite always hinted that to them that, okay, you know, you guys have to train hard. You know, I won't be here all the time. You know, you have to step up and stuff like that. But they never knew that it's going to be now. Yeah, but it just felt right. And I just felt like, okay, I've always said, okay, I have a lot of things that I want to take off my bucket list. Because when I'm an athlete, you know, even, for example, like one of the things I wanted to take off my bucket list was like, we train in Sunway Pyramid. So I've been in Sunway Pyramid training since it opened in 98 until now. And I've never actually gone to the ice skating rink and tried it after like 12 years. Is it 23? Oh, yeah. After 22 years, yeah. So those are the things that, you know, sometimes normal people won't realize because I of course wanted to, but then even my daughter took skating lessons, but I cannot because what if suddenly, you know, suddenly you trip over yourself and you injure yourself and then suddenly you can't go for competition.
Oh, Charlene, because, now you can.
Yeah, now I can. There's a lot of things that I can do. So like, you know, and I always wanted to continue my studies in sports psychology. So that's one of the things that I wanted to do as well, even when I graduated in 2006. But I wasn't able to because being an elite athlete with the training, then especially when I had my daughter and with the work that I do, the NGO work that I do for my sport, I have like maybe 5-6 jobs. So realistically, but nobody knows that because it's behind the scenes. So I'm always running around everywhere. So I don't really have time to like sit down and like, you know, do stuff. So now at least I have some time to do the things that I want after, you know, because a lot of people think when you're retired, you like sports is part of your life, and then a lot of them go to depression. This is actually a fact. A lot of athletes go to depression the first 2 years after retirement. So I didn't want to do that so that's why I did all these things to prepare myself. But still, it's not easy, you know. You're so used to waking up with the routine of training, gym, you know, and then suddenly now you don't have to do all those things. Right now it feels okay, but I don't know whether like 2-3 months down the line then whether, you know. But I still keep myself active, like doing other stuff. even after I stopped from the national team. So I think it's going to be okay. It's just like, it's a new leaf, new chapter for me.
For sure.
That
for
I'm
sure.
really interested to explore.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Charlene, it's not over for you yet. You'll be heading to the US in April to compete the pro circuit.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, you know, you'll be doing your masters, but also you'll be working on a book, right?
Yeah, that's one of my bucket lists as well.
Mm.
To write a book about my journey.
Mm.
Yeah, my journey, and share it with people, because a lot of people don't actually know what goes behind, because I'm quite a private person, so I don't really tell people all the things that actually happen behind all the trophies that you see.
I mean, speaking about your journey, Charlene, let's talk a bit about that now. You started your bowling journey at 9 years of age. You joined the national team in the late 80s. How did you know? You were playing lots of things and you were involved in lots of sports back then. How did you know that bowling was the path for you?
Well, I always loved sports when I was in primary school and secondary school. Like you mentioned, I played every single sport that was there in my school. I knew, I think, when I was probably 10, 11, mm-hmm. when I started training seriously for bowling, when I was going to Form 1 after UPSR. My dad asked me, he knows that I'm really very active in sports at school and all the co-curriculums. So which sport do you want to go further in? I said, then we discuss. And then, no, athletics not too good for me because I'm short, you know, and I'm not really slim. But then we went through all the list and then take some off, cross some off and take some. And then say, oh, bowling, because I was into bowling at that time. So I was like, oh, bowling looks like a good sport because your physique doesn't really play a major part in that, because it's a close skill sport and it's more of a skill technique sport. Your height and your size matters, but only to a certain extent. Not as much as other sports. So I say, maybe then I would have a good chance, a high chance of succeeding in that sport. And fortunately for me, I did.
Of course.
So so that's the process of like picking bowling. And then because I started to roll the first ball, just fell in love with the sport because it looks so easy, but it is so difficult because there's so many things that you have to master.
Yeah.
It's like one is the equipment, then the lane, then the oiling pattern, and then you yourself, you know, and your opponent.
Yeah, a lot to
do. So there's a lot of variables involved that and you need to solve, you know, like a lot of problem solving on your feet. So I like that. And when I started competing locally and internationally, I just love to compete. The adrenaline rush, I just want to be good. That pushes me for training and all the stuff, to get to that pinnacle, you know.
Charlene, I know your parents were bowlers as well. Was there like a strong nudge to bowling for you at the beginning?
Not really, because actually they started bowling first before me.
Yeah.
But then I just followed them to the bowling alley because they used to bowl and just like play games with their pot games with their friends, you know, with drinks and stuff like that. So
you grew up in that environment, that bowling
environment. I grew up in that environment, and then like I never really thought about it until like one day I just got tired of like playing with all the other kids while waiting for my parents to get done.
Right.
Because we would play until the bowling alley closed down.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so like until 1 o'clock.
Wow.
So I got so bored every day of like, you know, catching and like, you know, playing stuff behind their pair of lanes. So I just thought, why don't I just try? You know, the first time I tried it, I had my ball was in the gutter. I was so angry. I said, I'm pretty good in sports at school, but why am I not able to, you know, get a strike and stuff like that? So that challenge just like kind of got to me, and then like I tried to be better over the years, you know, as I progressed. So
yeah, I mean,
so that's what kept me in bowling. Just like, you know, there's so many things that you have to actually think about and actually like problem solve. So
for sure,
it's intriguing to me here.
I mean, talking a bit about your professional career, your debut was at the 17th SEA Games back in 93. You became a household name at that Games. 2 gold medals and 2 silvers at the age of 15. That's just crazy. Take us through that first that debut at that SEA Games. Were you intimidated as a newbie in the professional scene?
Yeah, that was the first time I was picked to be a part of our national senior team. Because at that time, it wasn't really something common to be in the senior, in the junior, national juniors and the seniors. Now it's common. Our team does it, everybody does it. But at that time, it's not a common thing. So it was rather, actually, it's a really good experience for me. My seniors in my team, they welcomed me with open arms and they taught me a lot. And I also just listened and like absorb whatever knowledge that they gave me. Mm. And I knew that our team was a strong team. Especially going to the SEA Games, where we had Lisa, Lydia, Shelley, all of them were household names themselves. So I knew I had to step up, and that really pushed me in training, you know, especially after I got picked for SEA Games. And then before that, when I did well in Sukma, that's how I was picked for the SEA Games and the national champion and so on. So I just wanted to, like, you know, work hard and try and fill those big shoes that my seniors have. Set up for me, so I did, and I really enjoyed that time, because at that time as well I was really like really kind of like relentless, like in my pursuit to just like win as many things as I can and be the first to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Charlene, speaking about that, you were national champion at 14 years old, a record that hasn't been broken yet till today. Talking a bit about your formative years, you really had to grit your teeth, you know, to get to the top, to where you were and where you are today. Sleepless nights, blisters, and even to go to train, you had to take a 2-hour long journey to Asia Jaya to train, right? Tell us a bit about those early years.
Well, those early years were really fun, actually. If someone were like really to ask me, how did you do it? Like, you know, at 10 years old, take your own, like be responsible for yourself, basically, like, you know, because my parents were working.
Yeah.
And they can't really like send me everywhere, so I had to be independent. So I just learned to like go on the bus myself in the morning to school. I think I when I was 10, I already did that on my own, you know, the whole hot bus, the green bus and the bus mini. I would take that to school, and then just like, since I know I train every day, so I just bring all my stuff, my training stuff with me in my bag, school bag. So my school bag was really heavy every day. So I just don't know, like, come to think of it now, looking back at it, I was like, how? I don't really like understand how I can do that, like, without even questioning it. But at that moment, I just did it.
Yeah.
Just like go with the flow and, like, you know, okay, if you want to do well, okay, I usually set goals for myself. Okay, I want to win this in, like, for example, national championship. And also, what do I have to do to do that? The process that goes into that.
Yeah.
So I just followed what I set myself, the goals I set myself. So I never really like, really think about it, you know, oh, what if. But obviously at that time I was still young, so like all my friends, my classmates were like, hey, come on hang out with us at the mall and stuff like that, because most of the kids were hanging at the mall, you know, after school. But I wasn't. I was like going to the bowling alley and like training and like eating at the bowling alley. I'm like in Ken Bowl, and when I finish school, normally I'll take 2 buses from Pudu to Kota Raya, and then switch from Kota Raya to Jaya, and then after that I'll go walk. I did a lot of walking, so probably that's also good, helped me with my fitness at that time. I was really super fit besides doing other sports as well in school. So then when I got to the bowling alley, just like put my bag, there's this one table that's kind of mine, but it's like an unknown fact that it's mine, so nobody sits on that table,
right?
It's in front of a TV. So I just put my stuff there, and then I'll eat, I'll change my school uniform, do my homework, and then watch TV, and then wait for my parents to come, and then train, and then eat again for dinner, and then just the whole process over and over, like every day.
Yeah, I mean that hard work kind of paid off, you know, Charlene. You won 3 world championships, 2003 in Malaysia, 2007 in Mexico, and 2017 in Las Vegas. But the most memorable victory for you, you mentioned, is the 2017 KL SEA Games. What I want to talk about here is, you know, even though you've showcased your incredible talent across the globe, there is something about winning in your own home country, isn't there?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, because I've been really fortunate to be able to bowl and compete in front of Malaysians a few times, like the Commonwealth Games in 98, and then the SEA Games 2001 in Penang, the World Championships in 2003 in KL. So my first experience didn't go as well as I wanted. In front of the home crowd in the Commonwealth Games, but I got better, and I used that. The fact that I wasn't able to win a gold in the Commonwealth Games, I used that to fuel my great and my desire to be able to perform in front of everyone. Because, you know, sometimes when you read in the newspaper and when you watch on TV, you kind of get how athletes perform and what they went through, you know. You can see from their facial expression and everything. But when you actually come to the arena, especially in the KLC games, where, you know, all the officials that are working the tournament are also your friends that you've known for more than 10 years, because they wanted to be a part of the big games. It was just nice to, like, kind of show everyone what kind of, like, the fuss was about. Because nobody, only those who watched me compete in those games know what they mean by, you know, me motivating my teammates and me pushing past boundaries. I actually had one really touching comment by one of my friends, some people that I know. They said, oh, you know, because at that time, I think I was, 2017 was 4 years ago, so I was like going into my 40s, and a lot of people told me, like, oh, you know, you're too old, you should retire, and stuff like that.
Prove them
so
wrong.
Knowing me, so knowing me, I always like to prove people wrong, and I use that to fuel me for my training and stuff like that. And I didn't want to say anything, because for me, it's like, okay, you can, it's okay, you can say whatever you want, I'll just prove it to you on the lane, because in the end, that's what matters. No matter what you say to them, but if you don't have the result to back it up, it's not gonna, you know, people are just say, oh, you just you don't have anything to prove. So I just use all the energy and, you know, channel it in the right way and prove to them. And actually after that, because one of them used to say, oh, you know, you're too old, I thought you must retire and give way to a young one. Then actually after that incident, especially the Masters, that same person came up to me and told me that, oh, I think I know what the fuss is about now. I think I know why you've won so much and why you deserve to still be in the team and to represent us.
That was living legend and the queen of Malaysian bowling, Shalin Zulkifli. More of that conversation coming up, so to stick around right here on Bar None, only on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. So far in the program, we've been in conversation with a Malaysian sporting legend, Shalin Zulkifli, who earlier in the year retired from the national team after 28 years of grinding her way to the top, earning 74 medals for the nation. One big major tournament that always have been eluding bowling is the Olympics. Hopes were raised when he made the 8-spot shortlist for the upcoming Tokyo Olympics, but ultimately did not make the final cut along with squash and wushu. Here's Shalin with her thoughts on missing out on the Olympics.
Hard, it's hard, because actually we have been a demonstration sport for the IOCB for more than I think about 3 or more times. And I actually was in one of the in 96 Atlanta. I actually went to Atlanta to be a part of a demonstration sport. They picked like the best bowlers from all over the world to actually compete. They did a competition there to show the IOC, you know, that bowling deserves a spot and stuff like that. So I actually competed in that game. So, but only as a demonstration sport. So it's kind of hard, because one of the things that my goals that I set was also to like win an Olympic medal. So but bowling was never in the Olympics. So that's kind of bummed me out. But, you know, because certain things are not within your control, so you can't really do anything. We were the closest to be included in the Tokyo Games, because we were able to come back and like be in the top 8 shortlisted for the last hurdle for the 2020 Tokyo. But they picked, I think out of the 8, they had to pick like 3 or 4 spots, and bowling didn't make it. So that was kind of disheartening. But we still continue to grow our sport, and hopefully one day it'll be in, and hopefully one day I'll be able to watch bowling win a medal in the Olympics.
I mean, a throwaway question, but if bowling was in the upcoming Olympics, would you have retired?
Oh, no. That's a quick answer, no. Yeah, because that's like every athlete's dream, like the ultimate dream, lah. To be an Olympian, not only just to be, I mean, for some of us, like, just not just to be an Olympian, but to actually compete and, you know, win a medal. So, if it was, no, I would still be gritting my teeth and just like taking it all in. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your coaches now. I mean, your last coach was Holloway Chia, a monumental figure in your career, a role model, a coach. But I want to talk a bit about your other support system, your family. I read that your mom was your media trainer.
yeah, kind of. Yes, because she used to work in... I was really fortunate because she used to work in TV3. So she worked in TV3 for like... When TV3 first started in Jalan Riong Bangsa. So actually when I was in school, it was either the bowling alley or I would go to the TVT studio in Bangsa.
Right.
So I kind of grew up there in that line, kind of. So when my mom used to work, because she does a lot of different departments. So she was in sports and then she was in entertainment. So sometimes before, when they had the music finals, because I was there watching all of them sing, you know, behind the set and stuff like that. So, and like sometimes my mom, you know, when they read the news, my mom would work the news. So like I would go on the set when it's not the time for news.
Sure.
Just like pretend, no, sit on the set and like read the teleprompter and stuff like that. But so she would, after every interview I usually do at the earlier part of my life and now too sometimes, she'll dissect. And like we will have like a debrief moment every interview. Then she's like, okay, what you did right? Okay, you did this good. Okay, and then, okay, next time you must do this more. You know, so.
So she's going to dissect like this interview as well.
No, I don't think so. she just doesn't care. I think she did a lot of hard work in the earlier part of my career. So so that kind of helped me out as well on how to like answer. Reporters and stuff like that. So I've been fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, it's great to have that kind of like a different kind of coaching, right?
Yes.
Comparing the competition, Charlene, to 28 years ago, tell us a little bit how it has changed and evolved in terms of the professional level.
Oh, it has gone really like 360 degrees, I think. When I started, bowling was just a parlor game, you know. They would smoke and drink in the bowling alley. Now, bowling is a legitimate sport. It's like really a sport where, you know, people compete at the professional level, and we have like fitness instructors. We need to be fit to do well, just like any other sport. And before, you know, bowling centers were kind of gloomy, dark because of the cigarette and stuff. Now it's like all lighted up. You can't smoke in the bowling, you can't drink. So it's really evolved from what it was before to really high performance sport in Malaysia. And that's just the environment. Like even right now, equipment wise it was so different at that time and now compared last time. We were just using rubber balls and your balls didn't hook.
Rubber balls?
Yeah, rubber balls at first. So early 90s, and then I started, I think, 89, 90, and then like only in 94, 93 onwards, then they had the first reactive ball where your ball started to hook. And now it's like, last time one bowling ball would last you like maybe 4 or 5 months. Now you have to have a ball like every competition you go to.
Oh, wow. A new ball.
Fresh surface. It's expensive when you get to the highest level. It's really expensive because right now one bowling ball will cost you about RM1,000.
Oh, wow.
Plus, when you go for a big major game, you need to have at least 6 with you.
I see.
And then before you get the final 6, you have to drill quite a lot before you finalize the best 6. So it's a lot. Last time, it's mostly not so much on the equipment, but more on your ability. But now, sometimes, I guess with the progress of R&D and equipment stuff.
Equipment does matter now.
Unfortunately, sometimes not in a good way, because sometimes if the other person is able to do less, it's kind of an advantage because it lets the ball do its thing. So I've had to, over the 28 years, I had to really like change my game as well to suit the evolving environment of the equipment. Because when I started, I was like really physically very strong and everything, and then my ball speed was really fast compared to the other girls. That's one of the reasons why I did so well. And I went up so fast. because of my fitness and my ball speed. And then when everything was, when Kegel came in and they had like standardized lane pattern of the oil and stuff like that when you put on the lane, then it was too oily for me because my ball didn't have enough friction. So I had to change my game to slow down my ball speed and like to do improve on my technique so I could still have the same friction on the lane. So it's a long journey and I had to change a lot of times. Right. But it was fun. It was always changing because it was always changing. I had to always update myself and learn new stuff. Yeah.
I mean,
so it kept the 28 years. Like, it flew by really fast. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I really never thought about. You know, equipment, a change of equipment means also a change in adapting your style and your playing strategy.
Yes. Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, yeah, no, but only if you're really into a sport, you'll, like, notice all the changes. Like, even in training, we used to train 3 times a week before for 2 hours. Now we train every day.
Mm.
So everything's become really specialized and more focused.
Mm.
So it's really good. It's really good, but it also takes a lot of toll on your body. So you have to take care of your body really well. And just that my body is being overused over the years. That's what my doctor, my specialist, tell me. Even my hand specialist, Dr. Andrew, will tell me, why are you going to stop? You know, your hand needs some time to heal. Okay, after this tournament, I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
But then next tournament, but yeah.
It's good to listen to your body, but also the mental aspect of it is something else also, right? I mean,
tell
us a bit about how you prepare and deal with that pressure when you're, you know, thrown into a national limelight. I've seen a couple of photos of you, you know, bowling with your earphones on. Maybe tell us a little bit, you know, what kind of music are you listening to when you bowl?
Naturally, I'm a person who's really intense. As you can see from my, you know, if you've seen my pictures of me shouting and stuff. Actually, my coach used to tell me, you're one of the first that started it, you know, being intense. And because before that, female bowlers would just, you know, if they strike, they'd just clap and just shout, not like me, like, you know, like that face, like going to war, gladiator, like I will kill you, that type of face. They don't usually do that. So, that's one of the things that, remember you asked me about the Singapore Sea Games. One of them, like, one of my competitors, Bongku, she's a legend over in the Philippines as well. When she first saw me compete, she's like, why is she shouting? You know, kind of thing. So, like, they find it strange. Because at that era, nobody did that. So, it's kind of funny. But yeah. But nowadays, almost everyone does it. So.
Yeah, you're the pioneer.
And, yeah. So, coming back to the music, because I'm so intense, so I have to listen to music that kind of calms me down so that my arousal level doesn't get too high.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would listen to, like, actually, we have a sports psychology script that was given to us by the ISN Sports Psychology Department in 98, Commonwealth Games.
Okay.
I still use it until now.
Oh.
So that's what I listen to get you in the right frame of mind. And it tells you the script, you know, so that you can plan in your mind even before you compete. Like every day, you know what to do. Just in case if something happens, you're not going to panic. Something goes wrong, you're not going to panic. You know, you have to come back and stuff like that. So I will listen to that. And then music, it depends on what I need at that time. When I was feeling really down after the Commonwealth Games and I had my confidence is really down, so I listen to a lot of Mariah Carey and like sappy music, you know, like if you had a heartbreak kind of thing. But for me, music was really important because I would listen to I'm an auditory person, so I would listen to the lyrics. And the lyrics were really important to me, so that kind of like motivated me. Like one of the songs that I would listen to was Mariah Carey's Can't Take That Away From Me, Mariah's theme. So if you really listen to the lyric, you can really associate what you're experiencing with that, you know. And one of the lyrics that they are is they can't say anything they want to do, like, they can't take that away from me. So like, you know, so it kind of like reminds you and like it's kind of related to like positive self-talk as well.
I see. Got
when you,
you
sing you. It, you kind of like, you know, acknowledge it to yourself as well. And if you've done it a lot of times, you kind of brainwash your own self.
Got
you.
You.
Know?
Mm.
to believing it. So yeah, that's
your go-to.
One of the things that I love about sports psychology.
Great stuff. We'll talk a little bit more about sports psychology in a bit, but you know, the future, the next gen of Malaysian bowlers. Right now, is there anyone that sticks out to you as, you know, the next Charlene 2.0?
There's a lot, but I think it's not fair for them, for like people to say that, because one, actually every time someone says that, it kind of jinxes the other person. Everyone that my coach is, okay, she's going to be the next Charlene, and then end up that person never fulfilled their full potential. So I kind of pity them, but I'm sure there'll be someone, I don't know when, but we have a few good, whether it'll be the next Charlene or not, but at least we have a progression of girls and boys, or men and women who will be winning for the country. I think that's the most important, whether it's the next Charlene or not. But at least I can continue the legacy that my seniors have set before me, and I've tried to continue within my 28-year career. And now it's their responsibility to do that, to continue that legacy.
Mm.
But there are a few, like my teammates, you know. Most of my teammates right now, I see them grown up. From they were like 10, like Esther, Jane, you know, Siti Safia, even like some of them, I've coached them before, like Natasha, I've been her coach before, and we've been teammates for the last 5 years, so I know how they think and stuff like that. So Jane, Atta, Esther, Sophie, all of them have really good potential, but they'll need to work. I think they need to just learn to stick together in terms of like team, because that's one of the things that we are good at, team spirit. So I mean, they've gone through all, because normally you have to go through a different process, like learning, experiencing stuff, you know. When you're young, you come up, you know, you want to do things on your own. Like for me, when I first came to the team as well, you know, you think you have to prove yourself to the world, kind of. And then slowly when you get, because you have to kind of like open yourself and be vulnerable with your teammates, then only you will like click together, and like, you know, you can like, you can be a unit. When things get bad, you're just like, okay, I'll don't worry, I've got you, you know. Don't worry, no matter what, I've got you. So that kind of helps them feel more relaxed and you know, confident going into the game. And all of them, all the names I mentioned, Atta, they have that in them, and they've learned over the years to use that as what my seniors have taught me when I was in there. So now it's probably their turn to just step up and work together, because like, you can't have one single individual to like to help the team. Sometimes it's not that easy. So I hope that all of them will combine and like, you know, help the team up with their own individual strengths.
You're holding some series of webinars now called Championing the Mind. You have a degree, like you mentioned, in sports psychology. Tell us a little bit, you know, do you have plans to, is Championing the Mind kind of like a platform to, you know, spread the importance of psychological health?
In a way, I kind of started last year. I've always had like talks like that with some of the kids, the development kids, even when I was coaching for Selangor. I was a head coach for the Sukma bowling team, for three Sukmas, I think, Sukma Pahang, Sukma Perlis. So when I do coach, that is kind of my style, because every coach, there's a thing that they are good at. So me was like motivating my kids. I always like push them way beyond what they think they are capable of, but while still making it fun and, you know, safe for them, they won't get injured and stuff like that. So yes, I have always loved, that's why like when I retired, a lot of them asked me, so do you plan to coach the national team? I don't know. I know that's an option, but to me right now, that's not what I really plan for, but I would like to help them, but just not the national coach, because my husband's already coaching the juniors.
Right.
So it'd be hard for our daughter if both of us coach. But I'll just help, since I'm already in our sports association, so I will always be there. They can always ask me for any help.
Yeah.
I'll always help them. But my passion is teaching the kids, because a lot of people ask me, so why do you like coach the development, you know, your level, you're the elite level, why do you want to coach the development level like Sukma and all things? Because what I notice is, by the time the kids, we have some gap there, by the time the kids get to the national level, a lot of them don't have the right technique, mentality, attitude, that package,
right,
when they get to the national level. So it's really hard for them to break through to the backup, to the elite, because of that. But it takes a lot of time for them to know all that, so which they should already have been doing or learning in the beginning of their career, like the development phase. But it seems that they miss out a lot on that. So by the time they get to nationals, a lot of years is wasted to trying to teach them that.
Right, gotcha.
When they really should have that when they get to national. So I saw that gap and I was like, okay, I want to try to help in that sense to prepare the kids so that they are ready when they go to the national level.
That's great.
And alhamdulillah, I've been able to do that. I helped quite a few to get to the elite, like elite level and national level, national juniors from my team. So I'm quite happy about
that. That's nice.
So yeah, I've been doing that all my career actually. But just this last 2 years actually really doing webinars and really actually teaching them, because when I was still competing, I didn't have time to do all these like webinars and like, you know, to really teach those who are interested to learn. But now I do have time, so I'll just help whoever that wants to be helped.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have someone like you, you know, a living legend in their corner, especially. Charlene, when talking a bit about Malaysian sports icons, for many Malaysians, you're in the same boat as Datuk Nicole David, Datuk Lee Chong Wei. I know many has been calling for you to receive a Datukship as well. I mean, Datuk Charlene Zulkifli has a nice ring to it, for sure.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm so thankful and flattered that everybody thinks that way, because a lot of the, I mean, the media has carried it because it's from the people, the Malaysian people who are actually questioning it.
Correct.
So I feel really flattered that not everybody's thinking of me.
You deserve it.
In that way. And they think that I deserve that recognition. But for me, it doesn't really matter, because like that's not the reason why I've stuck around the 28 years. The reason I stuck around the 28 years is because I just love to compete and win for Malaysia. For me, if I lose, it's a personal thing for me. I don't know, like if I lose, if I go to competition and I lose and the Malaysian flag is not on the podium, I really take it personally. I'm like, I let the country down. That's why it was really hard for me for the Commonwealth Games, because I felt like I let the whole country down. You know, everybody's hoping me to win. I did not. So I always put that burden on my shoulders. I never really thought about all those, like, you know, the status, the titles. I just wanted to win competitions. Because for me, once I get paid to represent the country in the national team, it's my responsibility as an athlete to win. So that is my big why. I just want to win for Malaysia. And all these other things are just secondary, are not really that. You can't really think like, you know, if you're going to, oh, I want to win because I want to be famous and I want to be this, I want to be that. It doesn't work out that way. You won't reach your full potential because it's not from inside of you, you know. For me, like, I always, when somebody asks me why I can last so long, because it's your intention, your big why, that's the most important reason or important thing that will push you to reach greater height. So for me, I'm really flattered that everybody thinks I should. For me, if I do get it, it's a bonus. If not, it's fine. I just love that everybody thinks. I just am thankful that everybody's, like, you know, supporting me and, you know, giving me best wishes and du'as for my next phase in my career. Because, sports is part of my life. I still have a lot of things that I want to hopefully achieve after this to tick off my bucket list. So, I don't really think about it so much,
Charlene, last question. Any advice to, you know, aspiring athletes inspired by your story?
Do you have an hour? No. Well, actually, like what I said just now, your intention has to be pure, you have to want to do it for the right intention, to win for Malaysia. Your patriotism has to be there, because that will carry you through so many things that you will, all the challenges that you have to face to be at your best. You know, because being an athlete is not an easy job. When you win, people applaud you, you're the hero. When you lose, you're the bum. People say a lot of things about, negative things about you, and, you know, it's hard to hear because, you know, you sacrifice a lot for the country without, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't get after you're an athlete. You know, sometimes you just people don't care about you. So it's hard to swallow. So the journey is not easy. So you have to have the right intention, and you have to have the passion for it. It's just a lot of hard work. needs to be done, and you can't just skate through even with all the talent in the world. But if you don't work hard, don't do it for the country, you won't. I mean, you probably will achieve a certain level of success, but not to what you would be capable of. I think maximum that you are, your ideal performance state, I don't think you'll be able to do that. So you have to have the right intention, be passionate about it, and always think of the country first before anything else.
That was Charlene Zulkifli, the queen of Malaysian bowling, a living legend. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. If you'd like to revisit the interview, the podcast will be up real soon, www.bfm.my/barnone. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us at BFM Radio. And also do remember to download our BFM app via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Darryl Ong. You have been tuning in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Join us again next week, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.